If someone came to you with $5 million today, how would you allocate it? Here's $5 million. I want you to manage it for me because you're such an expert. What would you do?
I would probably go buy the nicest, cleanest multifamily deal in a great market. I think I'd go all in on just one deal.
Just one thing.
I don't even know if I'd allocate it. I mean, I'm very bullish on self-storage.
You are. I am. Do you think that self-storage is oversaturated?
It is, but if you get the right deal in the right location, I think it's a no-brainer.
It's almost like a cash cow. When was the last time you went to your self-storage? That's the question I always hear.
That I've ever used one?
No, that's the question I always hear. When was the last time you went to your self-storage? And most of the time people will say, I don't know.
That's the thing. We're all hoarders.
And we are.
We'll just sit on it. But yeah, I really like them in the right location. I mean,
yeah.
the climate control in the right location. The one here on 280, I mean, that's just...
The one over
by the new Whataburger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a jam up spot. I'd buy that one in
our
heartbeat.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Think about the place you're situated.
Yeah.
Okay. So as a producer at Bellwether, finding loans, you're a business owner.
Correct.
You are. You're a business owner, commission only. How do you structure? Because a lot of people that are commission only people kind of get tight because they don't know what they're going to make the next month, the next quarter, the next year. Do you guys specifically structure your lifestyle because you're commission only in a way that's like, we do this because this is the way we are? Anything like that?
So the way we operate in our family is I don't take any distributions throughout the year. I literally will wait and take it in January. So in January of 26, I'll be paid for everything in 25. And then we will live off that during 2026. And then in 27, I do the same thing. So when we first started, my wife was a CPA and she was doing very well for herself. And so we kind of lived off her salary as I was getting my feet underneath me. And it just kind of created an environment where we weren't broke going into my first true year of production. We kind of had a little nest egg built up. We're just replenishing it.
So you get paid once a year.
Basically.
So like you have not taken a paycheck. Here we are in August. You're not taking a paycheck in 9 months.
Correct. Now, we get a very, very small salary. I can set my salary whatever I want it to set, but I have to basically pay it back from the commissions that I make. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
So from day one, I set my salary as small as I could to kind of force us to live off that. And so we just get the bigger bite of the apple at the end of the year.
So you get a huge chunk. It's not a bonus. It's a true commission.
Yeah, true
commission.
You get
a huge chunk in January, and you say, you know, if it's, I'm just going to use a round number, $240,000. Hey, we're going to live off this much per month because this is going to divide it by 12 and go from there.
Correct.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah. So we've been pretty fortunate. I live by two things. Good things happen to good people, mm-hmm. and all things happen for a reason.
That's right.
And so I've just been really lucky in my client base. I mean, I built it up early. It usually takes someone a really long time. I just kind of hit the right jet stream with the right people. And it's been very fortunate.
So 25 years, that's a good lead in. So 25 years in this, how did you get in that jet stream? Going back, how did you build that clientele? What was the key or what was the thing that you did?
I got out in the industry and I found young guys, like-minded guys, kind of always said I'd always do business with people that I wouldn't be friends with. And it was also timing too. If you can remember 2003 to 2008, we were in pretty good times. I mean, it was a buying frenzy. So the multifamily acquisitions really kind of started me in the right direction. And then it just kind of built from there. But a lot of people in my industry took a big hit during that recession because they didn't have as many multifamily clients. Like if you had built your base around hospitality, like if you were loaning on nothing but hotels, you had done great until the Great Recession and hospitality industry went under. Mm. Same with industrial. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but like the industrial vacancy in Birmingham got up to like 25-30%.
I don't remember. What do you mean? When you mean industrial, you mean like warehouses?
Yeah, warehouses. It was awful.
See, everything I hear today, though, is warehouses are killing it.
Oh, killing it. Killing it. Because if you go look at the building permits pulled from 2009 to call it 2016-17, very little was
no
built.
No one building.
Very little was built in Birmingham.
So the people that are buying things right now, they're buying stuff that was built pre-2008.
Yeah.
or they're building brand
new? It's a lot of brand new stuff being built. I mean,
interesting.
Yeah.
Are you actively looking for deals right now, like for yourself?
Sure. Always. Always.
You're always looking.
Always.
How much of an advantage do you have being in the business that you're in of seeing all these deals cross your desk? Does that help you?
I can look at a deal in 10 minutes and tell you if it's a good one or a bad one.
But do you ever find, do you ever view that as deal flow?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How do you ethically turn down a deal, or how does a deal not get done and you scoop it up? So Thomas brings you a deal in Fort Payne and we don't like the deal, you don't like the deal, then all of a sudden, do you ever go back and get that deal?
No, I've never done that.
Yeah.
Never done that.
Just because of the ethic.
Yeah, yeah, no, I've never done that.
Do you find yourself learning a lot on other people's mistakes?
I have. The biggest mistake that I've had, one client lose it all and felt so bad for them. They were a great family from Michigan and they were just beneficiaries of good timing. They bought a deal here in Birmingham. They sold a property in Hawaii and made a lot of money off of it. Sure. And they came to Birmingham on one of those syndicated equity tours that I mentioned about. Right. Syndicated equity. They used to do tours of markets. And the tour came to Birmingham and they bought an asset across the street from the Highlands Golf Course downtown.
Downtown.
Yeah. And literally 2 months later, a developer came to them and basically doubled the price they bought it for because they were going to tear it down and build the new apartment that's there.
It's
now.
There now.
Yeah. And so they basically thought, okay, this multifamily gig's easy. So, because they had doubled, and now they took this money. They bought two or three deals on Valley Avenue in Homewood, and they did not get third-party management, and they let the manager who was there on site kind of take over and run it for them. And she was a sweet lady, and she went back to Michigan and really kind of just took her eye off the ball because things was going so well. She just like, okay, it's just, we're putting it on cruise control. Before they knew it, the lady had been just cooking the books. And until the gas company somehow got in touch with her, that she had a delinquent gas bill, which, by the way, was for the whole property, for all the tenants. It was master metered. And until they got in touch with her, she had no idea what was going on. When she got down here, the manager was gone. They owed tons of money to all the utility companies. I mean, they lost it all. I mean, they went into foreclosure, bankruptcy. And it's because things were running smoothly, and she was trusting in the manager. So I would say that the experience that I gained there is you cannot let anything get on cruise control. I mean, you know this. You're a business owner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to be in the weeds. So,
wow.
Yeah, she lost it all. They lost it. And they never recovered.
Never did.
They got divorced and never heard from them again.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
How are you finding deal flow right now? Like, if you're looking for something, what are you going and looking after? Well, like, online, talking to this, talking to that. What are you doing?
Mostly the investment sales brokers here in town will call you on good deals.
But is it that point, is it too late?
You know, it kind of is. I mean, there's no such thing as an off-market deal anymore.
There really isn't.
I mean,
it's off-market.
No. And I don't know where we got into this world of you know, best and final. I mean, it's just kind of like an eBay bid at this point in time.
Sure.
So I say I'm out there looking. It would probably be a situation where I'd be brought in on a deal more than me out there actually beating the streets looking for a deal. Yeah.
So what is something you believed about business 10 years ago that you disagree with today?
Well, to my point earlier, I thought I could grow a company from scratch. And I just don't believe you can do that today with the prices where they are today.
Sure.
It's hard to build a deal these days. The cost of material just exceeds what you can underwrite the deal to. So I would say, you know, thinking that you could do something without partners or without seed money, you just can't do it. I mean, you've got to go out and you've got to raise the equity and then go deploy it buying some good deals.
Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about finding a 100, 200, 300 person, 300 unit deal and you finding the deal, coming to me, coming to 10 other people and doing a syndication? Because your deal in Tuscaloosa is not really a syndication.
No.
Have you ever thought about doing a syndication?
I would, but I think it would take more time than I have. I mean, I think it would, I would probably be neglecting my day job more than I would like to.
Yeah.
Because I also understand the value of what money is. I mean, in my line of work, I can make as little as I want to, or I can make as much as I can. There's no ceilings to it whatsoever. I mean, guys in our industry can make a lot of money. And so do you want to put all your time and effort into that and just make a lot of paycheck money?
Yeah.
Or do you want to kind of get off that and start finding ways to find deals? But yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to your regret question. My one regret in this was in 2006, I should have gone bigger, harder, faster, more riskier. Because in 2006, there wasn't Instagram. And so you don't see these pages of the Cardones who has, you know, morphed into where he is today. He started about the same time I did.
Yeah.
He just went way harder. He just, everything was grander.
I remember hearing Grant back in 16, 17, 18, he had a sales business where they sold sales products and they sold, you know, sales courses and things like that. Because he was a car salesman for forever.
Yeah.
And one of the stories he tells is everything that he made from the sales business went into real estate.
Yeah.
Every single dollar.
Yeah.
Just funneled straight into that.
Yeah.
And that's part of how. And then from that point, he's just really.
Yeah.
The mushroom just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And
yeah.
Bigger and bigger.
So my one regret, the one thing that I would do differently is I would have probably borrowed more money to do more deals when prices were low. Because, you know, everybody always says, well, it's too expensive to build a house right now. That deal's too expensive. Wait 3 years.
It always is.
And you look back and you go, wow,
that would have been a deal.
That would have been a deal. Oh. I mean, everybody does it. You almost didn't buy that house that you live in now because the price was too high. Well, you can't replace it now. So, yes, the experience that I've learned over the years is now that I'm 50 is I certainly would have doubled down.
Yeah,
I would not have held back. And I was back in 2006, you know, friends and family would have said, hey, you're taking some pretty big risks,
right?
You know, and I was at the time. I just wish I'd have taken more. I wish I would have borrowed more money. And those three partners that I had where I did good, they did great. You know, they found a way to buy 2,000-4,000 units. They just kept going and they just kept doubling down and growing. And they too sold everything in 2022.
So you said 2,000-4,000 units. How did they do that? Did they do LP investors? Did they syndications?
They were just buying and selling. They were flippers. They were flippers.
Buying and sell these apartment complexes.
Yeah, they would lipstick them and they'd sell them. Okay. They would put new carpets, new paint. They did a great job. But they were the first to do it. So they were buying the units at 30 a unit and selling them at 40, buying them at 20 a unit and selling them at 50. And so, you know, a lot of the same deals that we're probably still looking at and buying now.
Would you do that? Would you ever go that route? Would you, like today, would that be a method you would want to go down and path you would want to go down today?
For sure. For sure.
So what about these deals that I see that are vacant? Like there's nobody living in there because they're so bad that they're buying for $20,000 a unit even today. Would you consider doing something like that in a decent market?
We did one.
Tell me about that.
That was the other property in Jasper. It literally had been bought by two doctors in Birmingham, and they lost the property. It had been a dysfunctional property for a better part of 20 or 30 years, and people just kept buying it thinking they can just turn it over. And so these last two guys bought it, and they lost it. I mean, literally, they had no one paying rent. Few squatters were living in it.
Wow.
And we bought it back from Compass Bank. They lost it. We bought it from Compass. And we fenced it off. We kicked the squatters out. We literally put a fence around it, and we took it down to the concrete studs and the concrete walls.
So you spent some real money on this place.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. A lot of dollars.
So you renovated all 60 units with nobody in there.
Correct.
How long did the renovation take you?
About a year.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So how did you float a year with no income?
Well, we bought it basically next to nothing.
Really?
Yeah. It was a steal.
So bought it next to nothing and then just injected a bunch of money into it.
Yeah.
And then opened it back up.
And yeah. And you can borrow interest carry.
Sure.
So
explain that again. Explain that to me. Borrow
well, I mean,
carry.
Part of your business, if you go to with a business plan to a bank, they'll loan you 70% of the price and then they'll add in however much, let's just say the interest on that loan is $200,000. Well, they'll loan you that $200,000 to pay them back.
Pay themselves back.
Yeah. That's just interest carry. You just build that in so you're floating on their money.
You're floating on their money. So you ever had a deal fall apart at closing?
Personally or?
Both.
No and no.
Really? Just simply because you understand the numbers.
With it being a non-recourse loan, on the professional side, with it being non-recourse, we have vetted every angle.
Everything you could think
to the
of.
Deal. Because we have to make sure the deal will stand on its own two feet. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't be relying on Thomas's commission check for 2025. know.
That's right.
So yeah. It's got to be there.
Okay, what happens on a non-recourse loan if it – okay, play out scenario. We buy something, 100 units in Decatur. You like Decatur, you said at one mm-hmm. point. Buy 100 units in Decatur, but we just take all the rent money and we don't pay the bill. Where does a Fannie and Freddie loan – where does a Fannie and Freddie property go back to?
It goes back to the lender, which is Bellwether.
Bellwether. So Bellwether would own it, mm-hmm. and then you would then decide what to do with it from there. Mm-hmm. How many times have y'all had to take – how many times have you had to take back something that went under?
I've had that one loan that I was talking about that went bad. But multifamily generally is so highly desired that the shelf life is next to zero. If I called you with a property and I said, hey, this deal's about to go into foreclosure, would you not be standing there waiting for it the day it happens?
The day it happened.
Absolutely. So, that's it in general. I mean,
never have to take one back.
Nothing goes bad. I mean,
and you did the deal in the first place, so you know how good
correct.
It can be.
Correct. And there's so many ways to dodge that bullet. I mean, you could sell the paper, you could sell the loan and you assume it. So to avoid the foreclosure.
So let's talk about that. One of the things that was so attractive about that deal in small town Alabama that we talked about was an assumable loan.
Yeah.
And Fannie and Freddie will do assumable loans. Tell me what an assumable loan is.
So all of our loans are what we call permanent fixed rate deals. So generally our deals are for a 10-year term. And so they also come with that, with it being fixed rate non-recourse, you've basically sold that paper to a bond buyer. So they're guaranteed a rate of return for that 10 years. So it comes with a prepayment penalty.
Yeah.
So that's the downside of our deals, is they do have a prepayment penalty. But the good side is it's fixed for 10 years. You don't have a swap. You don't have to go through renewals. It's fixed. So your business planning, you know what that rate's going to be, and you know
for the next 10 years.
So if you do 2%, 3%, 4% rent growth against that rate, you know what your dividend will be at the end of the year. Mm. So we do have prepayment penalties that come along with our loans. So
explain a prepayment penalty.
So, I mean, it's just basically the future value of interest that you're going to be owed if you're that bond buyer. So if that bond buyer bought your paper for a 10-year term, he knows what he's getting over that 10-year term. If you want to pay him off early in year six, you still owe him for those 4 years interest. So that's the easiest way to describe what that is. So you're going to pay him pretty much what he's owed.
What's a way to get out of that? Is there a way to
get out of that?
You can't get out of that.
Assumption. That's why it's assumed.
So if I get a 10-year term and I sell it,
I could assume that if I wanted to. If your rate is attractive enough, I'd want to assume it. So if you did a deal 6 years ago, that's 2019. So your rates would probably be in the threes, maybe fours.
So heck yeah.
And so today versus what rates are today, yeah, you'd want to assume that.
Interesting.
So it can add value.
It can
to
add value
deal.
For sure.
Yeah.
So everyone in everything that we do has had somebody that's held their hand and helped them along the way. Who is the number one person that's helped you throughout your business career?
So I would say the person I mentioned earlier, Jeff Patton, who hired me, we just kind of stayed together. He is still in the credit role of the industry. He's what's called a deputy chief kind of guy. He's kind of
so
over
fancy.
That, yeah. So he's over all the underwriting. And then John Segrist is the gentleman who hired me to come back in 2003 as a producer. And till this day, he still works with me. And so I leaned on him early on in my years. There's not a handbook for what I do. There's no manual. There's no learning curve. There's no apprenticeship. You just kind of jump in and you figure it out.
Just figure it out.
And so generally what you'd like to do is you'd like to get hired with someone older in the market that you can lean on. And so what I mean by that is he'll let you work on his deals to gain the experience, kind of get a little bit of fee sharing, pays you a little bit, and then you kind of get kicked out of the nest in a couple years doing your own deals. So the gentleman that I brought by with me earlier, Caleb Carter, is that guy with me. He's brand new in the industry. Yep. And so he could go into it blindly and do what he can, or he could hitch his wagon to me and we kind of do it together. So that's what we're doing.
What are you learning right now?
Am I learning?
You're 50. You got one kid just went to college. You got two, one high school, one middle school. You're a grower. What are you learning right now?
Our job can be boring like anybody's job because it's kind of redundant. We do the same things over and over and over. What I'm learning is more about, how the economy is changing, evolving, how we're relating to jobs more, what downsizing. We're having to now think about what downsizing AI could have effect on things. Things like that is what I'm learning the most, is trying to think ahead of what could change the dynamics of markets to be able to afford these units. Because if you've seen what new stuff's being rented for and built for, I mean, it's ridiculous. So we ask ourselves, can that stay? I mean, these units are renting for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a unit.
Crazy
amounts. So we're thinking, is that going to be able to stay? So a little bit more forecasting in my job today than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Thinking ahead. I'd say that's probably what I'm learning the most.
What do you read every day?
Fox News, and I will do Wall Street headlines.
Me too.
That's about all I read.
I love it. Yeah. I bought the subscription just to read. It's like if you get the print edition. And then I will flip through it at some point every day.
Yeah. Because all news is tainted. One side or the other. So
absolutely.
I read Fox to get one side, and then I'll read Wall Street the other.
So you think? So I've heard that the Journal is less tilted than some of the other ones.
Which Journal?
Wall Street Journal.
It can be. Yeah, I would agree with that.
It is a more neutral.
I would agree with
than
that.
Than a red or a blue.
Yeah.
Publication.
Yeah.
I love reading it. So in your job for 25 years, walk me through how you make money, like. Deal comes in, we do a deal. How does that work, like percentage-wise and things like that?
Oh, so every deal has a fee associated with it. And then it's just like kind of like the single-family realtor's work. I mean, the house takes a percentage. It's a sliding scale. After you get over, say, $1 million of fee income, it starts tilting more towards the producer, less towards the house. So, you know, in my line of work, if you don't finance say more than $60, $70, $80 million annually, you're just treading water. So
you've got to finance $70 million a year to make it to be doing the okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you think about it, that's a lot of deals at $2, $3, $4 million a lick. So that's why it's hard for a young guy to get started, because the bigger deals come with the bigger, more sophisticated borrowers
and the bigger, more sophisticated lenders, like
so your 60-year-old entrepreneurial guy that's, you know, got a $100 million net worth, owns, you know, 5,000 units, you know, the young guy, he's less likely to give a shot with. So the younger guys of the world have to go after the smaller deals, chase more. But I mean, in my line of work, if you don't hit a couple big deals, it's a struggle. So
how does a guy like Caleb, we'll just use Caleb, he wouldn't mind us talking about him. How does a guy like him make it in your business?
You got to be a hard charger. I mean, he and I laugh about it. We kind of make a joke that you got to have a little of OCD, a little AD. Yeah. You kind of have to be a hard charger, very self-motivated. And I mean, just kind of always thinking, always finding new angles, always thinking about who you calling next and how are you getting in the door.
Yeah.
You know, so it's relationship based.
It is relationship based, isn't it?
And it's a very small world. I mean, look at you and I. We didn't know each other forever, and then one connection brings us together. And so it's Birmingham is a very big small town.
Very much so.
And so you just gotta, you know, you gotta prove yourself, get a reputation built, and it kind of goes there from there.
So let's talk about faith for a second. You talked about your son earlier being a faithful kid and, you know, diligent in his walk with Jesus. How has your faith influenced the decisions you make in business on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
Oh, I mean, I treat everybody exactly how I'd want to be treated.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many people in my industry that will just do whatever they need to do to transact.
Absolutely.
I mean, they don't care about the end result. They just want to transact. They want to make a fee.
Right.
I mean, there's shady ways of doing business in every line of work. And
sure.
Some of that happens. But I've always had the mindset of, if you do it right the first time with that client, they're going to come back no matter what. And customer service is priority number one. And if I can help you avoid a landmine, you're going to turn into a great client.
Sure.
But if you hit a roadblock and it knocks you down a couple years, or it takes $200,000-$400,000 of your hard-earned equity away from you, I mean, you're either likely not ever going to do a deal again, or, you know, you're definitely going to do it with me.
Sure.
So I kind of use my job as a little bit of an advisory role.
Absolutely.
Where I will just kind of help you along the way and help advise you. But first and foremost, I tell this to anybody, cut bait quick. You got to be able to cut bait quick. You'll spend tons of time working on the wrong deal.
Yeah.
And you spend way less work on the right deal. So you got to cut bait. I tell that to Caleb at least once a week.
At least once a week.
Because I've seen so many producers come into our line of work that will spend 2, 3, 4 weeks trying to size a deal and make it perfect. By that time, your competitors already got the deal under wrap. I mean, you got to move fast. Just like when you're looking at buying a deal.
You got to go fast.
You got to go fast. If it's the one you want and it checks your first 10 boxes, you got to move.
You got to move on it.
So, yeah. So, like I told you, I mean, I tell everybody, send me a deal. I'll help you look at it. Yeah. I help you size it. I may see something that you don't see. Sure. I may look at it a different way that you didn't look at it. So, man, I just love interacting with people.
Time, yeah. Okay, you see and coming in contact with a lot of people, like myself, a lot larger, smaller, whatever. Are there any habits that you see from these big players that separates themselves from other people in this industry?
Attention to detail. My best customers know what's going on at every level, from property management to maintenance, thinking outside the box of new amenities that they can offer, you know, things like that. Just really being innovative, getting ahead, staying ahead, and just
attention to detail.
Be involved. Wow. Be involved.
If you were 22 today and graduated from college, what would you go do?
Same thing.
Would you?
There's never been a day that I would say I want to do something else. Now, we all go home going, God, I'd hate my job, and I'm ready to quit. But I have very few of those, and I really, man, I'd have done the same thing. I think finance is a great, great industry. Mm-hmm. I think real estate is a great industry. The one advice I would have for anybody young is get more involved early on. Interviewing now, I would say internships are critical.
Bro. Yes.
Where internships were kind of not even a big deal 20 years ago.
Right.
Today, one of the first questions that I hear interviewees asking is, where did you intern? Mm. What experience do you have?
Yeah.
So it kind of gives you a big leg up on the competition. My little company is pretty big at interning. We've had three interns the last two summers.
That's good.
And so they're coming in and just getting their feet wet. So
all of the interns that come to us, I look at them and say this, and here's the thing. You're at the end of this internship, you're either going to love what we do and want to do it, or you're going to hate this business and not want to do it. Both of them are wins.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing you can do is say, I want to be a veterinarian, and you never intern for a vet. And then all of a sudden you get into it and you're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Whereas you go intern and make no money and stand alongside a veterinarian for 6 weeks or 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And you go, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Or,
for sure,
this is freaking awful. Like, I've told this story on here before. Like, Sierra has a daughter, Zoe, and she came and interned with us. And I just said, hey, look, you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. Like, either one is a win.
Yeah.
Because you can figure out, like my wife, for example, she was pre-med like your son. She gets into some, like, thing, someone's taking blood, and, bro, she passes out. And she's like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
Whereas my roommate in college was like, I'm going to be a dentist.
Right.
Well, he's 44 years old right now and killing it. He loves being a dentist.
Yeah.
So, like, figuring out what that thing is pretty important.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
This or that. So, here's what I'm going to do.
This or that.
I'm going to say A or B, and you just tell me which one you want. Okay.
I'm not good at these.
Well, too bad. Okay. Fixed rate or floating rate?
Fixed.
Class A or Class B apartments?
B.
Perfect. Five small deals or one big deal?
I would say one big deal.
Conservative underwriting or aggressive growth?
Aggressive growth.
I know the answer to this one. Partner with capital or go solo with control?
I'd go solo with control if you've got enough bang in there. So.
Right. Visionary client or bankable client?
Can I say A and B?
Sure. I guess so.
Like I said, I don't turn down a deal.
That's right. Hunt or fish?
Oh, gosh. I love them both so much. I'd say hunt.
Okay. Big game or small game?
Small game, for sure.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a big duck, turkey, dove guy.
Love it.
I've done enough deer hunting that
I
still go.
Right.
Just from the camaraderie side.
Sure.
But I'm not that big into it. I don't hate them that much anymore.
Deep sea fishing or lake fishing?
I'm deep sea fishing all day
long. All the way.
All the way.
Love it.
Love it.
As a new person, starting operations or starting finance?
Finance.
For sure.
I want to know how it works.
Sure.
Mechanically. All of it. I want to know.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, you did great.
Thank you, sir.
If someone wants to find you, where's the best place for them to find you?
LinkedIn.
Great.
That'd be probably the easiest way from a business standpoint, but, you know, social media.
Perfect.
You could Google me. I'm sure I'd come up somewhere.
Somewhere.
Post office posters, most wanted list, whatever.
Paul, awesome job. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.